Hello, you're listening to the CZ of Movies. My name's Colin, I'm the C. Joining me is Zijan the Z. Hello, Zijan.
Hey, Colin. I don't know about you, but I can predict the future because I've just came back from a stag do, and I know that in six podcast time, yep. I will be coming back from a stag do as well.
You'll also be at a stag do.
Yeah.
What an exciting few weeks it's been for you, Zijan.
It really has.
how was the stag?
Oh, it was really good. We did this whole VR thing. Well, yeah, when you have to put something over your head and then you do some games using VR, which is okay, I guess. Yeah. It's not too bad. There was a zombie one. Like, I feel like all the stag dudes I go to...
It's all zombie-based now. Yeah. It's this year's must-have stag do accomplishment. It's the most wonderful time of the year, Zijan.
Is it?
It is.
Why? It's not...
It's because it's the time of the year when you're a year older than me.
Oh, yes.
I love it. Did you have a good birthday?
Yeah, it was great. Thanks. We went to Dorking.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's Dorking. Yes. Basically, Surrey. And then went walking around the hills of Surrey, which is really nice.
Very nice. And what's it like being 38?
Oh, man. Enjoy your last few weeks. It's awful.
Thanks, man.
My back aches.
Yeah.
Everything aches.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's downhill from here, man.
Yeah. No, I tend to something to look forward to with red. Oh well. today we're looking at Killers of the Flower Moon, a long, long film. We'll get to it. We're also looking back at the Schindler's List. We've got a quiz on the Rambo movies. And much, much more.
Much more.
Although, again, not that much more. We start...
Well, more than last time, I think.
Oh, really? I've got less than last time, so good work.
Really? I'll start then, shall I?
Yeah, hit us with some movie news.
Well, Taylor Swift is rumoured to appear in Deadpool 3.
Yeah. Not the first time Taylor Swift has been rumoured to appear in an X-Men movie. She's been strongly linked with playing Dazzler before.
Yes, the pop star X-Men who can turn sound into light.
That seems like the least useful power ever.
Well, I mean, lasers are made from light.
Oh, right, so she can attack people with it. She can't just like make it brighter or something?
No, well, she can make it bright as well, okay. Of course, but she can turn it into a laser, which is quite deadly.
Have you ever seen any of Taylor Swift's acting work?
I've avoided Cats.
Yes. Yep.
I've avoided Valentine's Day.
Yep.
So, yes, I think those are the only two films I know that she's in.
She was in Amsterdam. Well, fairly briefly. Which is the David O. Russell film from earlier this year, I think. Maybe late last year.
Okay.
I haven't seen Cats, but I've seen the other two. She was quite good in Valentine's Day, I thought. I mean, she did what she had to do very well. So
she did have a big role in Valentine's Day, did she?
No. I mean, there weren't really many big roles. I guess it was very montage-y, lots of vignettes. In fact, she was one half of a couple with Taylor Lautner, if I remember rightly.
Oh, Taylor Lautner. Mm. It's been a long time since I heard that.
Yeah, the two Taylors together. I'm very excited by Deadpool 3. I think of all the upcoming superhero films, that's the one I'm looking forward to the most. I think if she's going to do it at all, it's probably the one to do it in. But do you know what the source of these rumors is?
No. Why is it?
I think she was seen somewhere with Hugh Jackman, wasn't she? Like at a sports match.
Oh, really? Wow.
Or something. I think so. And obviously Hugh Jackman is in Deadpool 3. Do you know anything about Dazzler? Like, was Dazzler in the old cartoon series?
Not really. So she doesn't appear in the cartoon series. She's usually a character that... So it's very weird because she appears as one of the heroes in the very old X-Men video games.
Oh, yeah.
And she's used as a joke, really, because, you know, as you were saying, you know, how can sound converting into light be a superpower? But I think they've amped up her power quite a lot. In the recent comic books, she's a pop singer, and she tends to use her powers to basically create like lights for her shows. Really, so she doesn't usually use it offensively, but when she wants to, and she has done it for the X-Men, she can. She's a good counter against Black Bolt, whose power is basically his voice, right?
Oh, Black Bolt, yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so in one of the comic book series where the X-Men were against the Inhumans, she was just basically just used to counter Black Bolt because she basically nullifies his power altogether.
Okay. Well, that's I don't think we're going to see Black Bolt again, but I've said that before and I've been wrong, so
yes.
Who knows? Matthew Vaughn, speaking of the X-Men, was being interviewed recently by Josh Horowitz. I listened to that interview. He's being interviewed because the trailer for Argyle has just come out and everyone is quite excited by that. It's a new IP, and it's based on a book that hasn't come out yet, I think. But it's about a woman who's writing detective fiction, but it's all coming true, and so actual spies are trying to... Oh, yes, spy fiction rather than detective fiction. So actual spies are trying to kill her or save her. Anyway, so I guess because of the ongoing actors' strike, people like Josh Horowitz are finding it difficult to find people to interview, so he's being interviewed. he was very candid, and he talked a bit about several things. So some of the things, okay, through the key bits. One of them is that apparently Kingsman and Argyle are in the same cinematic universe. I don't know. Did you ever watch the Kingsman?
No, I didn't. I only seen the first two Kingsmen.
So I tried. I couldn't get through it. I thought it was terrible, but it's been better received by others. But he says that Kingsman 3 is in the works, so Taron Egerton and Colin Firth will be back. And I guess then therefore some sort of crossover between Kingsman and Argyle. But it looks a lot of fun. He also said he might reboot the Kick-Ass film series, which seems quite quick. Kick-Ass 2 doesn't feel like it was that long ago. Well, maybe it was.
No, but apparently there has been a comic reboot of Kick-Ass.
Oh, has there?
Okay. Yeah, so... no, the new Kick-Ass is Patience Lee, a black Afghanistan war veteran.
Oh, right. So a completely different character.
Who knows whether they'll go down that route?
I'm sure they will if that's the current comic. Okay. He also said that he was told by MGM that he was going to be directing Casino Royale, and then it turned out he wasn't. But it was he that suggested Daniel Craig for the role, apparently, having worked with him on Layer Cake.
Wow.
And what I found fascinating, he was originally going to be directing X-Men 3, and then he dropped out of that before later directing X-Men First Class. But apparently, one of the things he didn't like about X-Men 3 is that when he was due to direct that, he came across a script that was called the Halle Berry script, which had a much bigger part for Storm in it. And apparently that script was only used to convince Halle Berry to sign the contract. And then immediately they were always planning to get rid of it after that, which is astonishing.
Oh, wow. That is very interesting news.
Yeah.
I remember X3 quite well. And although Halle Berry's powers became a bit weird in X3 as well, I remember her doing the spinning tornado whirlwind thing, which was very weird. I'm not seeing Storm do that before. I understand why they wanted to give her meteor parts, because she didn't have very big parts in the first two films in general. But yeah,
I mean, she was so underused in those movies. And she just won an Oscar at that point for Monsters Ball. And for X-Men 3, there's two names above the title. It's Hugh Jackman and Halle Berry, which is such an odd thing. Because, yeah, Hugh Jackman's a star of that franchise. And clearly Halle Berry was not. But I guess to get her to sign the contract, they had to do that, maybe. Yeah, no, it's a shame how little she was used in that series. But there you go. It was a very illuminating interview from the kind of guy who clearly doesn't mind burning his bridges with major studios.
Yep.
Well, he has his own production company now called Marv, and I think he's just doing his own stuff with that now.
Well, if he wants to, why not, right? At least now he's giving us news to talk about on this podcast.
Josh Horowitz asked him if he'd go back to directing Bond at any point, and he said that basically they don't like him, and he says he's more likely to be playing Bond than directing Bond at this stage.
Our next bit of news is that James McAvoy is making his directorial debut with a Scottish music biopic. I've not heard of this before, Colin, so you may be better placed to educate the masses about this. But this is about a fake rapping duo called Sybil and Brains, who were created by Gavin Bain and Billy Boyd in the late 90s.
I must admit, I saw the story. I've not heard of these people either. Syllable and Brains. It sounds like a fun story, though. I know nothing about it.
Really does.
I guess James McAvoy, I don't know whether he's going to be in it or not. I assume not one of the leads. Maybe he'll be a manager or something. I don't know. But he seems like someone who's done quite a wide array of different films. Someone who's interested in the filmmaking process. So it's not a big surprise that he's going to go behind the camera.
Yeah. It sounds like a decent story. Apparently he's been made into a film before. Or a documentary. Called The Great Hip Hop Hoax.
I wouldn't put myself forward as an expert in hip hop. So if
neither am I.
it might be that the fake Scottish hip hop duo sound very much like any other hip hop duo to me. But
they're the biggest thing ever, and we just don't know because we are so out of the loop.
I do have some friends who are into that genre of music, so maybe they'll be able to fill me in on what's going on there. It certainly seems more. So last time we recorded, we talked about Chris Rock directing a biopic of Martin Luther King. And
Yes.
This feels more appropriate than that, or at least more expected. I think if you said to me James McAvoy is going to direct a thing about fake Scottish hip hop, I was like, yeah, okay, you know, that makes sense. I'm on board with that.
I know what you mean.
He does, because he's done comedy, he's done horror, he's done drama, he's done all sorts. I like James McAvoy. I remember him with Mr. Tumnus in Chronicles of Narnia back in the day.
That was a while back.
That was one of his earlier ones, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Here's some news about the film Assassination, about the assassination of JFK. We already knew that Al Pacino was going to be in it. It's based on a script, I think, by David Mamet. We previously thought that David Mamet himself was going to direct it. I think I even went out and sought State and Main, a film previously directed by David Mamet, which I enjoyed a lot. But it's not David Mamet anymore. It is Barry Levinson, who I regard maybe unfairly as kind of a bit of a gun for hire.
From Rain Man.
Yeah. Did he do Men in Black? What does that?
Did he do Ben? Oh, I didn't know that.
That might not be right. No, I'm looking at his list and that's not true, so I don't know what I'm thinking of. But he did direct Wag the Dog, which was another David Mamet script. So
this is an assassination of JFK?
Yes. And it is some sort of thrill. I don't know if it's a kind of a alternate history type thing, or whether it's like an
Oliver Stone. I think it's quite conspirational. Huh? There must be a word for it.
Conspiratorial.
Conspiratorial. Yeah, nice. I was going for that.
Okay, because Barry Sonnenfeld directed Men in Black. I knew it was someone called Barry. Yeah, I don't know if you've seen JFK, the Oliver Stone film, but that's also basically a conspiracy about how the kind of the lone gunman and stuff, which or the second gunman rather, which I think has done a lot to kind of build up the conspiracy over the years about the magic bullet and all these things. So this one feels like it's going to be verging more towards the thriller. But I like David Mamet's, I haven't seen huge numbers, but the David Mamet adaptations I have seen, I've enjoyed a lot. Last Night is a very good one. It's based on sexual perversity in Chicago by David Mamet.
Danny DeVito and Mara Wilson are reuniting for a Matilda.
Yeah.
But not Matilda the movie, because obviously Mara Wilson is way, 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 way too old to play a 10-year-old girl.
Yes.
Yeah, in any shape or form. Danny DeVito played her father, Mr. Wormwood. But they are going to do Matilda in concert, and they are narrating the film, apparently. So that's
nice. Who do you think is taller, Danny DeVito or Mara Wilson?
Most likely Mara now.
Yeah. Well, I've looked it up and you're right. She's 5'1" and he's 4'10".
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Only 3 inches in it. Was that interesting?
I mean, some people may want to know, I guess. But how old is Mara now anyway? I guess late 30s?
At least, I'd have thought.
Early 40s?
And she's 36, in fact. There you go.
She's younger than us.
She's younger than both of us. And I'm seeing every different webpage. So the first thing I see says 5'1", then it says 5'1/4", then it says 5'4", then it says 5'5". Basically, no one knows how tall Mara Wilson is.
But it's just taller than Danny DeVito, that's all.
Yes, we can confirm that. And younger than us. And therefore, younger than Danny DeVito. So okay, I mean, I'm narrating it. How does that work?
Yeah, I have no clue. I have no idea how that's going to work.
I've not seen that film for a very, very long time.
It's a great film, though.
I remember enjoying it. I don't remember it being narrated much. But
no.
Okay. Well, good luck to him. You going to go and see it?
Maybe. I mean, there's a very good Matilda right now on Netflix anyway. That's the Tim Minchin one, which I hope you'll watch it because you like Groundhog Day.
I do.
It's the same music.
It's not on Netflix, though, is it?
I think it just came on Netflix recently.
Is it? Mm. Yeah, I'm back on Netflix. So
yes, I know.
Maybe I will. Let me have a look live on the pod. And by live, I mean recorded. Quirky kids music girl power. That seems like it's probably the right one, isn't it?
Yes.
I've added it to my list. There you go.
Yay.
Which means it's going to be even longer before I get around to watching Wheel of Time.
Yeah, I mean, you've waited like how many years? I'm sure you can wait a few more.
That's true. That's true. I don't have any more news, Ethan. Do you have any more?
I know there's another film starring Oscar Isaac, Jason Momoa, and Gerard Butler in a crime thriller called In the Hands of Dante.
Oh, yeah.
And Dante, as in the Divine Comedy Dante.
What?
Yeah, you know?
I know Dante, sure.
You know Dante, yeah. So, apparently, yeah, there's a film coming out. It's supposed to be a crime thriller. And it's apparently split across two timelines.
Is one of them...
One concerning Dante.
Okay.
And one concerning the modern iteration of Dante, I guess, played by Oscar Isaac. So, that's something that may happen.
It seems to be a book. So Oscar Isaac is a merger of... Okay. So Oscar Isaac is playing Dante?
He's playing the modern one.
All right. So I can't imagine that either Jason Momoa or Gerard Butler are playing an older Dante, surely.
Yeah. They'll probably get someone else then. Yeah. Who knows?
Okay.
Yeah, your favorite actor, Gerard Butler.
Ooh.
We need to mention this more now. This podcast is coming to an end so that people will not forget.
Yeah, I mean, because... Your long time hatred of Will Smith has paid off. You've got in ahead of the game.
I think so. Yeah, I feel very vilified.
Yeah,
not vilified. I feel justified. Yeah.
Now all I need is Rob Butler to get into some sort of high profile embarrassing situation. Well, he's hoping that he can do that in the next couple of months. Otherwise, that's going to be embarrassing for me. Is that all you got?
Yes, that's all I got.
Cool. We move on then to our segment To See or Not to Zed, where it's all about films we've recently seen and tell you, the listener, whether you should see them or not Zed them. Zijan, what have you been watching?
I saw the film Run on Netflix.
Run?
Run.
Do I know that?
The 2020 American psychological horror thriller film.
All right.
This is, if I'm not sure whether you've seen it being advertised to you on Netflix, but this is the Sarah Paulson film. Which is basically like Misery. You know the film Misery?
Yeah, I've seen Misery. Good film. Yeah.
So instead of a famous author and his biggest fan, this is about a daughter and her mother.
All right.
And her daughter grew up thinking that she was wheelchair bound.
Oh, wow.
And then realized that her mother basically has Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Sarah Paulson is the mother? Or the
Sarah Paulson's the mother.
That's pretty dark for you.
Well, I mean, it's not horror, I guess. It's more psychological thriller, right? So, and I do like Misery. So, and this is basically Misery Light, I guess. Mm. But I do like how the girl, a wheelchair bound, tried to basically, you know, you're rooting for her, right? And you're trying to root for her to overcome.
Yeah.
Escape the house, essentially,
yeah,
where she has been bound all her life. And it's nice to see how it plays through and how her ingenuity plays through the entire film. So I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it's not as great as Misery because I think Kathy Bates is wonderful in that. But I think Sarah Paulson has an amazing presence as well as the mother. So yeah, I think it's pretty decent.
Okay.
And if you cannot find Misery, I think this is a great alternative.
It's on Disney Plus?
It's on Netflix.
I was just looking at the Wikipedia. So it seems to have some links with Searching and Missing. Written by the same person, maybe?
I saw Searching. I think I saw one of them. The one with John Cho.
Yeah, that's Searching. Which obviously, it's a good film. But yeah, written and directed by the same people. Because missing basically is very similar to, like, again, does the same gimmick as searching, whereas this doesn't seem to do that. It wasn't all
It's pretty.
on a computer screen, was it?
No, it's not on the computer screen. She's not allowed the internet,
Okay.
Basically. So she's not allowed to know the pills that she's taking is actually causing her to stay paralyzed on from the waist down.
Wow.
Spoiler alert. But yeah, I mean, I think you can get it from the trailer anyway,
Fair
so.
enough. Okay. Oh, maybe I'll check that out. I've seen a film called Smashed, which is stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Aaron Paul. I mean, Aaron Paul, he was the guy in,
Yeah, Aaron Paul,
yeah, from
Breaking
Breaking
Bad.
Bad. Yes, it's a few years old, but I'm not sure where I heard about it. I think I was looking at Mary Elizabeth Winstead for something else and saw that she'd had a lot of critical acclaim for this. It's quite a low budget film. Basically, she's a teacher. She just realizes she's an alcoholic and tries to give up. Aaron Paul plays her husband. And that's the premise, really. And yeah, it's a really just phenomenal performance by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I think it's the best performance I've seen from her by some distance. It's really beautifully played, going through the stages of that. And I don't want to kind of spoil the twists and turns, but let's just say giving up alcohol is not plain sailing for her. So you see various different sides of her character, both drunk and sober, throughout the course of the movie. Yeah, it's really good. So I think it's very moving. It's funny at times. It's worth seeking out. I'm not sure it's actually available to stream anywhere. I got it on DVD, so I'm not
Okay.
sure how useful that recommendations is and right now, but I'm sure it'll be back on streaming at some point, or you can probably rent it on Amazon or something.
Well, if you want, you can rent the DVD like
You can rent the.
Columbus or
I mean, I
buy the
don't rent the
DVD.
DVD. I'm not going down to my Blockbuster. Yeah, but I like Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Obviously, she was in Scott Pilgrim, which is my favorite film, but I wouldn't say that I've necessarily seen masses of kind of really strong central performances from her. She tends to be supporting in the things I've seen mostly, I would say. And
Yep.
yeah, it's a shame because she's really good in this. And Aaron Paul's good as well. We move on then to our main segment, Killers of the Flower Moon. Zijan, tell us about Killers of the Flower Moon.
Such a long film,
Yes,
man.
it is.
So long. So long.
Yep.
Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese's latest film. And we all know Martin Scorsese likes his long films. Because we covered The Irishman previously as
Goodness
well.
me.
And speaking of The Irishman, guess who's back?
It's Bobby De
Robert De
Niro.
Niro is back. Yes. So this film has Martin Scorsese's two favorite actors in it. For the first time ever, combining Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, and Scorsese in one film.
Yeah,
First
the
time.
as you say, he did a lot of work with De Niro in the early days, a lot of work with DiCaprio more recently. The only time they've appeared together in something he's directed previously has been some sort of advert for an airline. It's all of it.
Really?
Some I can't remember what it's called now, the audition or something, but it's a short film about the two of them both wanting a role in a movie, and he gets to choose who gets it. But it's advertising. I think it's a is it a Dubai airline or something?
The airline must have paid Scorsese a huge amount of money
They had a lot of money.
to do that for them. That's crazy.
But yeah, this is the first time they've been together properly in a film.
Yeah. This is the sixth film between Scorsese and DiCaprio, and the tenth film between Scorsese and De Niro.
Ten.
So,
Wow.
a lot of history between them. They lead an ensemble cast that includes Lily Gladstone, Jesse Plemons, John Lithgow, and Brendan Fraser. So, what is this show film about? It centers on the series of Oklahoma murders in the Osage Nation during the 1920s. Committed after oil was discovered on tribal land. So the Osage Nation are basically American Indians, right? And in those days, the land where they were on, they discovered oil. So they made them very, very rich. But what happened was that they created a rule back then that the land, their riches need to be controlled by guardians who are mostly white. And back in those days, these white guardians worked to try to steal, take, coerce, get all the money from the American Indians by any means necessary. And this film basically touches on how one of them, who's played by Robert De Niro, William King Hale, tries to do that through his nephew, who's played by Leonardo DiCaprio, who is married to one of the Osage women.
Yeah. And it's based on a book of the same name by David Gran and co-written by Eric Roth and Martin Scorsese himself. Where are you on Martin Scorsese? Have you seen a lot of his films?
No, I haven't. I've seen The Departed. Hmm. I've seen The Irishman, obviously.
Yeah.
But more of his recent films, not many of his old films, I would say.
Okay. Yeah, because I've seen 17 of his films. So I've seen probably more than half of them. But a lot of the earlier ones were with Robert De Niro, I think. Raging Bull is great. Taxi Driver is great. King of Comedy is actually my favorite Scorsese film, I think, with that's not Robert De Niro. Goodfellas is one of my favorites. That's really good. I'd say of his most recent films, I really enjoy Shutter Island back in 2010. That's Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yes.
And The Departed was good, but I've not really loved... So The Irishman, I thought, was just kind of... obviously wildly long, but kind of very self-indulgent and yep. The effects didn't work. Wolf of Wall Street, again, I enjoyed bits of it, but it was way, way, way too long. Hugo was quite dull. So yeah, I think a bit hit and miss for me, and I think he really needs to rein it in recent films in particular. So I mean, the last great film he's made, I mean, is The Departed a great film? I don't know, one best picture, but
I enjoyed The Departed, although as I always mention on this podcast, the Hong Kong version of it, which was the original, is much better.
Fernal Affairs, yeah, I have seen both. I'm not sure which I prefer, really. That's good. But I guess the one that came first is probably the one to get the credit.
Yes.
Yeah. So I must admit, I was slightly steeling myself for this one. I wasn't looking forward to
I was definitely not looking forward to this, Colin. Anytime anyone suggests to me to, let's go watch a cinema. Let's watch a 3-hour film. 3-hour-plus film. It's,
yeah. 3 hours.
Gives me a dread.
3 hours and 26 minutes. The version I saw had a 15-minute interval in as well. Just to...
I chose the one without that. I chose the one which gave me a free drink.
You got a free drink, did you?
Yeah, of course. They had to convince us to go there to watch the
film. Wow, I didn't get a free drink. And in fact,
this is what happens when you're a famous podcaster, Colin.
That's it. You promised them a good review, did you?
Yes.
And the thing about the interval is it's not like I'm going to go and do anything. It's just it prolongs the amount of time I have to sit around. I think I went as far as the bin to throw away some rubbish and then went back again.
I know I made my own intermission because I had to go to the bathroom after the free drink.
We didn't miss anything too important in the way through that.
I hope not. Where was the intermission?
It was in one of the scenes between... I mean, it was about halfway through. It was the scene between Leonardo DiCaprio and Lily Gladstone where she was asking him about those things that happened to her sister, I think. But it was somewhere around halfway through, and maybe just over halfway through.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's difficult. We usually do spoilers and non-spoilers. There's not a lot to spoil here, I don't think.
No, it's based on a book and it's based on history. So it is based on historical fact.
Yeah.
So, the thing is, I didn't know anything about this before going into it.
No.
Even though I say it's based on historical fact and I assume that everyone would know it, but you know, it's not something that you won't be able to find online if you wanted to.
No, and I didn't know anything about this at all. I mean, I was familiar with the idea that white Americans have not treated Native Americans particularly well over the years. Although I didn't guess realize it had dragged this far into the 20th century in some of the attitudes here. I didn't know the Osage had struck oil and things like that. I must admit, when this started, I had a little bit of trouble following what was going on. Because it basically starts with a montage of Osage being shot, or not all shot, being killed in various ways. And a voiceover saying, Henry so-and-so killed, there was no investigation, Susan killed, whatever the names were. And I'm still not sure whether that was a series of deaths that happened already or whether they were summing up the deaths that we would see later in the film, because by the time they happened, I couldn't remember who they were at the start.
No. I don't think so, because I don't recall any of them. I wonder why he put him right in the front rather at the end, if he wanted to emphasize how badly the Osage were treated.
I don't know.
Putting them right in the front.
It confused me, because I was like, oh, those are... And they never got referenced again, which is what made me think maybe they were summing up the future rather than... Because no one ever talked about the fact that there'd been a lot of murders, I don't think, at that point. I could be wrong.
No.
So that was more confusing than it had to be. I don't know whether we want to cut to the chase and just give our kind of our views on we usually go through the cast, but I mean let's just cut to the chase and then we can circle back.
Sure, let's go on. So for me, I think it started off. It was hard to get into it at the beginning. I have to say, it didn't help that, you know, I was apprehensive about this whole film to begin with.
Yeah.
So it started off like, I think when things picked up, when things start to happen, when Leonardo DiCaprio's character got married, and then things start happening, then murders start happening, then when the tension starts to build, I think then the movie got much stronger. And then it kind of fizzled out towards the end a little bit. When you wonder, why do the police just leave Leonardo DiCaprio's character alone with anyone at any point in time to talk to people? Why? He's clearly... So his character is quite dim-witted. Is that the right word of saying it?
Yeah. I think very much under the thrall of Robert De Niro's character, his uncle. Very much kind of being guided by him. Yeah.
He's very easily persuaded.
Yeah, and so this is getting a lot of 5-star reviews, kind of being hailed as a masterpiece by a lot of critics. The Times went a different way. Kevin Mayer and the Times gave it 2 stars, and basically just said a lot of people have been very nice about it because it might be Scorsese's last film, and they want to be seen to be nice about his last film. If you've watched a lot of Scorsese before, the kind of bits where you think, okay, yeah, this is a bit like something in Goodfellas, say, but just. I mean, Goodfellas is a great film, and it's just full of swagger, and everything looks so cool. But and that's kind of the thing is showing the mafia that, I mean, the mafia maybe, I don't know, but showing the mob to be desirable in a place that they kind of get people would love to be part of, and the kind of the swagger, the excitement that comes with that, and then turns it on its head. But there's some incredible camera work, some incredible tracking shots, and this kind of every now and again you get something like, oh yeah, that feels a bit like that, but just kind of. The music isn't as exciting. The visuals aren't as exciting. It just feels a bit drab a lot of the time, I think. But
I did quite like the steady beat when something is happening, something tense is happening. I quite like that. I think that adds a lot to it. It's quite effective.
Okay.
The small boom, 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 and that happens quite often when well, Robert De Niro's character, William King Hill, is planning something, you know, something. And I like that a lot. I think that works.
Okay. Yeah. I thought, circling back then, well, to give my overall view, I was a bit disappointed by this. I, like you, I was a bit worried by going into it thinking, do I really want to sit through a film this long? But I've loved a lot of Scorsese films. This, to me, wasn't first-rate Scorsese. Robert De Niro, I thought, was really good, quite menacing, and particularly as he got older, I thought there's kind of this little old man, but still clinging on to power and still having quite a way with persuasion, particularly over Leonardo DiCaprio's character. I thought was strong.
I actually have the opposite view for Robert De Niro. Yeah, I think it was just fine. I think it's really hard to picture the 80-year-old De Niro. I think it's the same with the Irishman. Like, the things that he's supposed to be doing, because I was looking up the main character, this William Hale, to see how old he was when these things happened, these events happened. And he was meant to be 47 years old.
Right.
So I can imagine a 47-year-old planning all of this and conspiring for all of this. It makes sense. But if you want me to imagine Robert De Niro, an 80-year-old man, trying to orchestrate this entire thing, it makes it a little bit hard to believe, I would say.
Okay, this is going to be a rare instance where we take quite different views on, because I really like that aspect of it. Like, he's too old to actually be meting out violence himself, but kind of pulling the strings and manipulating people, I thought really worked as the older character. Whereas for me, Leonardo DiCaprio was less successful, and I think partly because he played the almost entire movie with this kind of weird grimace, which may be how the guy looked. I've no idea. But just seemed quite mannered to me. And Scorsese's got some phenomenal performances from Leonardo DiCaprio, starting with Gangs of New York and going from there. But it just, this felt a bit one note to me a lot of the time.
I quite like Leo on this as well. I think we've got very different views on this film, which is good though. Yeah, it's not very often. It's not very often. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio's character on Wikipedia.
So we don't know.
So you don't know whether he has a permanent grimace the whole time. But I did like his whole shtick, I would say. His whole... I don't know when was the last time I saw a Leo film. It must be a while, because I sometimes keep forgetting how good an actor he is. Like, I think he's a good actor.
Oh, yeah, great actor.
So I think maybe me forgetting how good he was, it helps a lot. But, I did like his whole shtick. I made it very believable, his character, even though you like to hate him. And you can see that he has some love for his wife, even though he's a total idiot and he tries to kill her, etc. Spoilers alert.
I mean, he tried to incapacitate her, but I don't think he ever tried to kill her.
Wasn't he trying to poison her the whole time?
I think poison her to keep her kind of inactive rather than to kill her off.
Oh, really?
I think.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think. Speaking of, Lily Gladstone plays his wife. There have been talk of her being kind of the first time that Scorsese's had a female lead character. I'm not sure if that's true, but one of the first times, I suppose. I don't think it's really fair to call her a lead character in this, because you don't really see things from her point of view a lot.
She suffers so much, though.
Yeah, I mean, she's really put through the ringer. Most of her family dies at their hands. All these terrible things happen to her. But it's very much a kind of massive things happening to her, and you see inside the mind of the other two more.
Yes. I agree with you there. Yeah, her main emotion throughout this whole film is just despair, which is very upsetting. It's a horrifying film to watch through, especially when you know it's based on a true story, right? It's completely horrifying. The amount of atrocities that they've done. And we're not going to stop here after this, after we talk about this, because we're going to talk about Schindler's List after this as well.
It's a bleak episode.
Yeah.
I think for me, though, the biggest failing of this movie is in the script, in terms of the evolution of the characters or the motivations of the characters, because we're being told this is a film where Leonardo DiCaprio is the character. I keep saying his character because I can't remember what his name is. Ernest.
Ernest
loves his wife, but also loves money, and so he's killing off or arranging to have kill off her relatives so that when she dies, he will inherit the rights to her land, which has oil on it. But I never really got the impression, apart from maybe, I suppose, later on when he's kind of, everything's coming to a head, that he's having to be much persuaded to this, that he's having a kind of a moral struggle, that he's weighing up kind of the murder, like kind of all of the terrible things he's doing versus the benefits. I'm never actually at any point really given the impression that he actually likes money that much, other than occasionally in dialogue he says, "I love money." And it's like, you can't just say that in dialogue. I need to have something shown that you're actually greedy. And okay, you drive a nice car. But I don't know, I never felt that believable that he cared that much, that he would do all this stuff. Like, I believe that Robert De Niro character wanted it. I believe that he was driven by greed. I just didn't get that feeling from DiCaprio's character, from the script at least.
I get what you mean. I do get what you mean. Like, there's no point in this film whatsoever that Leo's character Ernest ever wants to do much more with that money, to be fair.
What's he spending on grand schemes. He steals a bunch of jewelry at one point, so I guess he likes that. But if it's supposed to be a tale of hubris where a man basically threw away a loving marriage because of greed, I just didn't feel it landed that properly. That's a great, it's a classic kind of Greek tragedy story. That's a good thing to hang a story on. But I just never really felt it.
I thought it was more that he likes his uncle more than about the money. He's just listening because it's just a bit dumb. It's a bit slow.
Yeah. I guess.
No point in this.
Want to impress his uncle? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there's no point in this whole film where he has much agency, really. He's just doing his own thing because his uncle tells him to do it. So he's always been slow in his own right, you know. And the only thing that he seems to have some agency is that his love for his wife, which apparently he was the one who initiated the whole affair in the first place. But everything else was because his uncle tells him to, because he just doesn't think for himself. So I took that as it is, not because he cares about money. He's just doing it because his uncle tells him to.
Yeah. I just would have, I mean, a film this long, you feel you could make that point more clearly. And
yeah, I get it.
Let's talk about some of the other casts. So Jesse Plemons turns up playing as an agent.
An agent, yeah, from Washington.
Yeah, which I guess, I'd have thought FBI, but maybe they weren't called the FBI at the time, the Bureau of Investigation. I like Jesse Plemons a lot. I think he's great. I thought he was good in this role. It kind of, I must admit, from the trailer, I was more looking forward to him turning up than I was anyone else in this film. But it's very late in the day.
Very, very late. At first, I thought there was one guy who looked a lot like Jesse Plemons in the house. I thought, is that Jesse Plemons? And then when he showed, I was like, oh yeah, that's definitely Jesse Plemons. But I could swear that I saw someone, you know, who was part of the family who looks a lot like Jesse Plemons.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, he was good. Again, not a huge amount to do. But good. Nope. Speaking of not having a huge amount to do, John Lithgow's in this film. Yeah,
as the prosecutor, right?
Mm. He throws a few lines in, and Oscar winner Brendan Fraser
as the defendant lawyer, basically
still carrying a lot of that whale weight. He's but
I didn't care so much about the whole court scene, to be honest. I felt, you know, I mean, it came to a certain point where it's like, oh, this is still going on. And then the court scenes were just so, so long, man.
Well,
they just kept going forever.
It's interesting because I didn't feel they were, I'm happy with the length of them. It's just they didn't achieve much in that length. I thought, I like a courtroom drama. And if you're going to have the twists and turns of a courtroom. And again, like I don't know if you've seen Goodfellas, but Goodfellas involves Robert De Niro's character in that film in court and the various testifying against him and how that pans out. But it's done really well. Whereas this, there wasn't really a lot going on in the court until you had the final kind of testifying from Ernest Burkhart, from Leo's character, which is done quite movingly. But yeah, just every time they go to court, nothing much happens other than some people shouting.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like it's just a way to show cameos from Brendan Fraser and John Lithgow, really. Oh, here you go.
Yeah.
Guys, look.
Look what we got. Yeah. And if courtroom dramas can be brilliant if they're done well. But, I mean, it came to court fairly late in the film. So it's like, well, there isn't time to do this properly. You know who else had a small role in this film?
Cool.
Martin Scorsese.
Oh, did he? Who was he?
So right at the end, so again, I guess this is spoilers if anyone cares, but right at the end, there's a radio drama. So you kind of find, instead of doing the kind of black screen, text on screen saying what happened, they do it as a kind of a slightly hackneyed radio drama. But the last person on screen who talks about what happened afterwards, it's Martin Scorsese himself. Slightly overhamming it, if you ask me.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's not known for his acting, is he?
He's not. He's not. I don't think he'll be getting many roles. He was fine.
Yeah, he was fine.
He voiced a character in Shark Tale many years ago.
Did he look like him, though?
I think he did look like him.
Shark Tale, but he's bound to look like him.
Yeah.
I'm sure how much more to add to this film. It's just too long. That's all I can say. I've said that at the beginning, which was, Martin Scorsese needs an editor who can tell him no, because no one can watch this kind of films. But to be, you know, did the people clap in your cinema? Because they did in mine.
Oh, no, not in mine. I've not been in a cinema. People clapped for a very long time.
Yeah, people are clapping in my cinema at the end of this film.
But the thing is, all of Scorsese's films have been edited by a lady called Thelma Schoonmaker ever since Raging Bull. And
really?
Yeah. And she doesn't edit for a lot of other directors. I mean, she's done a few other things, but she basically scores as his editor. They're kind of a partnership. And you're right that someone else needs to come in and tell him I'll tell both of them. Listen, guys, just, you know, this is a great source story. It's a very, as you say, horrific, really moving is. Story.
Yeah.
And you can sum up what happens fairly quickly. I think it's just so self-indulgent and so unwarranted to have a 3 hour 26 movie that tells this story. Sometimes you come out of a film and think, wow, that changed so much over time. It's a whole world I've been taken through here. And you just don't feel that here. It's kind of, yeah, there was maybe a 2 hour, 2.5 hour worth of story here that you just dragged out.
Yeah, they definitely could cut so many parts. I could find so many parts for them to cut on. Do they really need to tell the story about her sister who was married to the husband and how they were trying to find out who was doing all the killings? No, it's not necessary. Do you need to show all of that? And
so little time of, this is why I'm particularly complaining about kind of seeing Leo's transformation or seeing his struggles or seeing us. Yeah. Like, well, if you've got this long a film, focus on doing that properly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. As I say, I liked Robert De Niro a lot. You like Leo Caprio or not. So maybe I'll, listeners will like both of them or neither, who knows.
Yeah, exactly.
But if it is Martin Scorsese's last film, I don't think it's the most triumphant bowing out you could have. I don't think I'll ever watch this again.
No. No one can make me watch a 3 hour and 25 minute film again, I don't think.
Should we move on then? It's going to be a short
to another long film,
a short episode, but is it a short episode but a long film? Yes. In our segment, Look Back in Oscar, where we watch Best Picture winning films of yesteryear. This time it is Schindler's List season.
Do I need to explain this? Everyone knows the story of Schindler's List. It's a 1993 black and white film produced and directed by Steven Spielberg about Oscar Schindler, who is a German industrialist who saved more than 1,000 mostly Polish Jewish refugees.
Yeah, it's
during World War II.
I don't know. Do you know how many Oscars it won? It won quite a few, didn't it?
I wrote here. It was nominated for 12 Oscars at the 66 Academy Awards and won 7, including Best Picture, Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best Original Score.
There you go. It was very different film, I guess, for Scorsese, Spielberg to do. He's best known in the 80s for doing films like E.T., Indiana Jones, Jaws before that, Close Encounters before that. He just come off the back of Hook that very same year. He'd done Jurassic Park. Is that maybe the best?
What a year right? Yeah, 1983.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Both Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year. Okay. What a range this guy has, man.
Incredible. I did read somewhere that basically he was told by the studio you can do, or maybe not by the studio, by someone, funders or something, that you can do Schindler's List, but you have to do Jurassic Park first. I think he said that after I've done Schindler's List, I won't be able to do Jurassic Park. Obviously, Steven Spielberg himself is Jewish, and in the Fablemans, some of that covered what it was like being a Jewish child growing up in America and the impact that had on him. Now, this is, as you say, is also a very long film, 3 hours and 15 minutes.
Yes.
The difference here, I don't know if it's the same for you. I planned to watch half of this in one evening and then watch the other half the next evening. I've actually got the DVD, which is broken onto two different DVDs. So I was going to watch one DVD and then watch the other. But I just couldn't stop watching. I watched it all in one go because it just, even though I've seen it before, just really reeled me in and made me want to, I mean, it's a horrific film that I've wanted to keep watching.
This is my first time watching Schindler's List.
Okay.
So I've not seen it before. And I did watch it in two parts,
okay.
I have to say. Yeah. Probably because it was quite late for the first day. I was like, yeah, let's not do this anymore.
Yeah.
It's very, very miserable.
Yes.
I don't want to keep watching this right now. But yeah, it is a really good film, especially towards the end as well. I think it started off slow because they went through a lot of backstory of Schindler, etc., etc. But I guess it helps to build out his character, right? So, my first time watching this. I love Ralph Fiennes in this, by the way. I think he's amazing.
Yeah, now he's probably. Oh, sorry, Ralph Fiennes. Sorry, I thought Liam Neeson. Yes, no, Ralph Fiennes is phenomenal. Did he win an Oscar?
I don't think so. No, but he's so hateable.
Yes.
It's,
yeah. I'd actually forgotten if I ever knew that Ben Kingsley was in this. I hadn't recognized him previously. And I think of the three leads, I might even say he's the best because I thought he was really great, but they're all phenomenal. Liam Neeson, obviously, I'd known by audiences now for things like Taken, doing kind of action stuff, but he was very much a dramatic actor at this point and obviously great in the title role. But yeah, I think unlike the film we've mostly been talking about today, you can really see the character change. So Oscar Schindler is he's just greedy, he's profiteering, he sees war basically as an opportunity for him to make more money. And then you see the transformation of his character. And in fact, some of the, I think, earlier people trying to write the screenplay of this, even though it's based on a real story, just felt it wasn't believable that a man would change like this. Obviously he did. And then Spielberg managed to find a way, in fact, I think it's still where I wrote it, but the script and the performance, it was written by Stephen Zylian, managed to find a way to make that compelling. But yeah, it's such a, I mean, obviously a very grim movie because it's about what it's about concentration camps, Jewish people in concentration camps in the war. I was going to say it doesn't shy away from that. In some ways, I think it does. I was looking through some of the criticisms of this and things like you don't ever see kind of rape, for example. You don't see kind of some of the horrors of war. But that's, I mean,
I think shows enough, though. I'm pretty sure when you see it, you won't be like saying, oh, wow, war doesn't look that bad.
No.
Concentration camps don't look that bad. No, you don't. They look horrific.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it definitely shows. I mean, and the kind of the casual, as you say, very fun, so good, but the casual way that he'll just murder people because they've displeased him slightly.
Yeah, that's just incredible. It's crazy. I have to say, I was in floods of tears at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't imagine that I would be, but when you see Oscar Schindler breaking down at the end and all the Jews that he saves around him, I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and I know that's
heartbreaking.
That's had some criticism for being overly schmaltzy, I say, or very emotional. I agree with you. I think it's a really powerful scene that really brings home a lot of it. I do appreciate the fact that it very much tells the stories from the Jewish point of view as well. So I think if this was made today, I think the kind of the woke criticism, as it were, would be this is a white savior narrative. And I mean, it's a true story, so what do you want? But it does take the time. I think Spielberg actually sent back one of the screenplays to kind of ask him to change it, to make it longer, to say, I want to see more from the Jewish family's point of view, how they are affected. I don't want to just see this from Schindler's point of view. So you get the when the clearing of the ghetto in Krakow, isn't it? And it goes on and on and on, and just horrendous cruelty that you see played out. And this is another thing that the length is used well here, because you see how things start off bad and then just get worse and worse and worse. Very powerfully done. It's rightly recognized as a phenomenal film. I think it's up there in kind of lists of great films of the 20th century.
Yeah, I agree with you. I should have seen this earlier, but I mean, it's a good, better late than never, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it seems such a weird time to do it now, because when we suggested this, since then, obviously, in Israel and Palestine, there's been all sorts of tragedy going on. So I think these stories don't go away in some extent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a fun watch, either of these movies.
Why?
But
grim podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, if you haven't seen Schindler's List, and I can understand why people might want to avoid it, but yeah, it's definitely one that people should watch, I think.
Yep, I agree.
Next time we are doing Actor Factor, and I think it's my turn to choose, and I've chosen the films of Caitlin Dever, whose name I'm not entirely sure I'm pronouncing correctly, but I think I am. Do you know Caitlin Dever?
I know Caitlin Dever.
Hopefully be having a bit more lightheartedness next time. But hey, let's finish off lighthearted by doing a quiz on a mass murderer. the films of Rambo.
Yes.
Have you ever seen any of the Rambo films?
Nope.
No.
I'm never going to.
I've seen one of them. So the first one's really good.
The first one, I assume? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll kick us off then. Speaking of the first one, how many people does Rambo kill in First Blood?
Oh my goodness. Do I get like a range?
No, you need to get it exactly right.
What, really?
Mm-hmm. I'm feeling ungenerous.
Why? You're winning this quiz anyway. 123.
One.
One?
One.
Well, I got one of the digits right.
Yeah, no, it the franchise starts off very differently to how it continues.
Question one. In the novel by David Morrell, Rambo was not given a first name. But what is Rambo's full name in the movies?
John Rambo.
Do you want to give a middle name as well?
Middle name? Oh, wow. I would be guessing, but I reckon it would be something... it's going to be named after a president or something. So, John Henry Rambo.
Oh, John James Rambo.
Good middle name. That's my middle name. Harsh marking, but okay. Who co-wrote Rambo First Blood Part 2 with Sylvester Stallone?
Is this James Cameron?
It is James Cameron. Very good.
Question 2. We find out the name of Rambo's father.
Oh, come on.
I feel like all my questions are about names. What is his name in Rambo 4 and 5?
James.
It's Revis.
What? Revis?
Yeah. R-E-E-V-I-S.
Oh, okay. I see what we're doing. Question 3. Rambo 3 was dedicated to the gallant people of which country?
Rambo 3 was... Of which one? Of what?
Was dedicated one? To the gallant people of which country?
Thailand, I guess.
Afghanistan.
Oh, really? Huh. Question 3 for me. The 2008 film Rambo is banned in which country?
I was going to say Burma, but probably Myanmar now. But Burma at the time, wasn't it?
That's correct.
Question 4. Who wrote the novelizations of the second and third Rambo films?
The same author, so David Morrell.
Very good. Yeah. I think that's hilarious that he wrote a book, they based a film on it, and then he had to start writing books based on the films. I think that's funny.
Yeah, I know. I love that. And those are really bad films as well.
Yeah.
So like, oh, okay, you wrote such a good book, but now we want to write books about the very bad films that you made. So
you'll take the theme that you have made that's brilliant, make it bad, and then make you do more of it. I mean, they probably didn't make him do more of it anyway.
Question 4. Sylvester Stallone is the king of the Razzies with 11 wins in over 20 nominations. How many of these are from the Rambo series of films?
Good question. I don't know. Let's say 3.
Yeah, what the heck? He won Worst Actor and Worst Screenplay for Rambo First Blood Part 2. And he won Worst Actor in Rambo 3.
Okay. Nice. Okay, last question for you. In Rambo Last Blood, how does Rambo kill the cartel leader, Hugo Martinez?
I don't know this. How do you kill the cartel leader? Is this the big bad guy?
Yeah.
Rambo 5. It's probably something gory then, right? Something
it's pretty gory. It's pretty gory, yeah.
Bloody. Did he rip his spine out?
Oh, I thought you were going to get it then. He cut his chest open and ripped his heart out.
Ooh. Yeah, well. And my last question for you is, I think you need this to win, right?
Yes, 2-1 at the moment, yeah.
In which of the films did Sylvester Stallone fear that it would kill his career, so much so that he attempted to buy all the footage and destroy it?
Oh, wow, okay. Now, I think I saw an interview with him saying that Rambo 4 was one of the films he was most proud of. Rambo 2, I don't think it would have been. Is it Rambo? I think he's going to try and destroy Rambo 5. At that point, he doesn't care about his career. So, or maybe it was the first one. Maybe he just thought the first one was really bad. I'm going to say number 1.
Yeah, you're right. Oh. Yeah, he thought the first one was really, really bad.
Yeah, no, it's worth a watch. I think it's a bit like Rocky in that the first film is really strong and then it kind of loses its way in the sequels where they come to take the wrong ideas or just make it a bit weirder. Well, I'm going to claim a great victory there, Zijan. Let me have a look at the year to see if there's
I'm
still
not gonna
time.
Win this now. Is there really?
I'm four up, and there are four
We've
quizzes
got five
left.
More podcasts.
Four left, I'm
four
afraid.
Four more left. This is 194, right? Oh yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So yeah, we've only got four more this year. We can chuck in the first quiz of 2024. The last quiz we'll do in this format. So to make a, which means that you could possibly still win.
Do I want
the
to
year
now?
If you win the next five.
Oh my goodness.
What are we quizzing on next time, Zijan?
Oh no, I forgot about this.
Okay.
What am I good at? animated films.
Is it going to be on Moana?
Pixar films after Cars. Because I know we did Pixar films till Cars, right? So we must have just finished it all.
Let me have a look at what we've done with Pixar. We did Pixar pre-Disney. We did Pixar films part two. We did Pixar shorts. I don't know what part two was. Oh, no, that wasn't a quiz.
Those are quizzes.
That wasn't a quiz. No, that was an episode.
Yeah,
Pixar films pre-Disney was also an episode. So, in fact, maybe we haven't done a... Pixar host Cars is the is the quiz topic for next time. I can see where we go in this.
For the next few quizzes, Colin, it's all going to be in my wheelhouse.
Things that Zijan is thinking of. It's what's our main topic for next time?
Oh, films beginning with the letter K.
Yes, who says we've run out of ideas in the dying embers of the podcast? We will see you then.
Yes. Bye.